Talk to us now and go to the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT. You're listening to Charlie Robinson on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
From the Rocky Mountains of Colorado, my name's Charlie Robinson. Thanks for getting weird with me for the next 2 hours. I can't start the show without thanking somebody that led me to this part. Great Kev Baker, good friend of mine who did this line of work for many, many years, had me on as a guest, taught me how live radio is supposed to be done. He passed away too soon early last year. I hope he'd be proud. I know we're going to have a blast. He always had fun. My mentor, the great Kev Baker, in honor of him. So thank you, everybody. And also, in the long-standing tradition of the great Art Bell, I've decided that we're going to keep a phone line open for time travelers only, 1-800-969-6642. This is for time travelers only. Well, there's no way to get this show started better than to reach out to my good friend, host of The Infinite Fringe, co-host of America Unplugged, a man who's been doing this for a very long time, from the Bronx, New York, the great Billy Ray Valentine. Oh, Billy, are you there?
What's up, buddy? How you doing, man?
It's good to hear you. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. You talked about Kev for a bit, and I was thinking about Kev while I was sitting in the waiting room, because when you started your podcast, Kev was your first guest.
Yes, he was.
If I recall correctly.
He was.
I was thinking about that, and now I'm, you know, Kev's no longer with us, you know, and we were all friends. I'm here with you right now, and I couldn't help but think that it would be Kev if he was still around, and rightfully so, right? So it's funny that you should bring that up, and I was thinking it at the same time. And also, time travelers only. I've been looking for time travelers for quite some time.
Oh, they're out there. Somebody,
I'd love to talk to a time traveler, please.
That
lines are open.
Lines are open. They're out there. Yeah, the great Kev Baker. I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing if it wasn't for Kev. Kev showed that you could deliver a message. You could do it with style, have a good time, have a good laugh. You could talk about the absurdities. I wonder what Kev would think about what's going on in Scotland today. They elected a new prime minister who was very controversial. I think that Kev would have some thoughts on it. And of course, I would be remiss if I didn't offer you have a very happy day of vengeance. Is today the day of vengeance, Billy Ray? It's today. I mean, how do we frame this? It's Tuesday.
Tuesday.
It seemed kind of perfect for it to be April Fool's Day if we're being serious about things.
Seriously, would have been the day.
I'll wait to wish you a happy day of vengeance on Tuesday then. We'll reconnect. But you're in the most important city in the world, New York City. And I wanted to talk about this with you today because you're somebody that has been deeply involved in the truth movement for a long time. You're one of those guys that was handing out flyers about 9/11 on the street, talking to people. You know, you were there. You were in it. So I'm curious to know, you know, New York City has this, anyone that's ever been there, you've lived there. I've been there a bunch, but never lived there. It has this vibe. It's very much, I don't know, I guess maybe a heartbeat is maybe the wrong way to describe it, but there's a soul to it. And it changes over time. You know, there's that period in the 80s when things were kind of rough and you had Peep Land down in Times Square and things were a little different. You had the crazy 70s of Studio 54 and all of that. We had 9/11. Well, we had Giuliani come in, clean up, turn Times Square into Disneyland. And then you have 9/11 and it changes things. And you go through a 20-year period. And you know, fear infested the city for a while, and rightly so, I think. And then you come out of that and we go through another situation with COVID. I'm curious, what's the pulse of New York City these days with everything that we see going on? What's the vibe out there?
Well, there's still some people that are very much afraid of COVID, right? It's been ingrained in people here. We experienced a lot of things out here that a lot of the world didn't, right? Or not to the extreme, right? That we experienced out here. So while there are many people that don't subscribe to it, right, and don't think it's half as serious as they made it out to be, there are still some that do subscribe to it, and for a variety of reasons, right? Because while the media was pumping the fear, you know, they saw people pass away, right? For whatever reason, you know, it was blamed on COVID. Was it actually COVID? Who the hell knows, right? But it was blamed on that, and we saw mobile morgues, right? And we saw all of that stuff that was real here in New York. A lot of people speculate that never happened. It did, you know, and I know people that worked in them, you know, so they were a thing. It traumatized a lot of people, you know, to the point that, you know, they thought the world was ending. My next door neighbor thinks the world is ending. Her husband passed away, unfortunately, during the pandemic. And she told me once in an elevator, she was like, listen, man, it's the end of the world. We're never going to get past this. And I wanted to tell her, I'm like, hey, listen, I didn't say anything. I didn't know how to maneuver that situation, but I wanted to tell her, I was like, listen, the CDC says that 98% of people are fine. You know, I mean, but that would be insensitive, right? So I said nothing,
yeah.
You know, I just took it and left. But most people here in New York now, while there's still some fear, are going about their business, you know, and you don't see very many masks outside. You still see some people. My mother, for one, actually yesterday was wearing her mask, you know, and I asked her why she did that. And she's like, well, you know, I don't want to get COVID. And she looks at me and says, why aren't you wearing your mask? And I never really did. Like, I would wear it around people during the height of it because I didn't want to piss anyone off. You know, I didn't want to start arguments with people. And there was some of that, you know, that there were some people that would get upset at you if you weren't wearing it in the end of the world. Right. Yeah. So I'd wear it. And plus, you have to wear it to get into supermarkets or, you know, essential things. You'd have to wear the mask. Right. So I would slap one on for that and keep it moving. But most of the time I wasn't wearing one. And my mother, you know, always got on me for that. She's like, put on your mask. Right. But a lot of people here have moved on, which is dope. Right. The restaurants are booming. People are outside, you know, even though things are super expensive. People are outside having fun and moving on with their lives, right? And nobody's requesting this vaccine for anything anymore. I mean, well, most entities out here, most businesses aren't interested in it at this point, right? Everybody's moving about their business. As far as 9/11 goes, it's a distant memory for many, you know, unless you were there at the time or you were around that age range. If you were directly affected by it, you know, those people, it's still very fresh. And every September 11th, I go out to Ground Zero. I've been able to do it every year since 2005. Thank the Lord. You know, I go out there and I try to raise awareness about, you know, or just raise some questions that people may not have thought about, you know, and try to, you know, just get some information out there to people and have conversations. Right. The 9/11 families come out every year, but as far as activism goes, we had crowds of thousands in 2005, 2006, 2007. And now when I go out there, it's me and like, I don't know, eight people, you know, then that's a lot. Right. And you know, you have to go out there and try your best. Right. But we had a strong presence in the beginning. And I remember one of my friends telling me, this is going to die down. People are going to stop coming. And I was hoping that he was wrong, but he was absolutely right. You know, so that, I mean, that's what's going on here. I mean, time heals all wounds is what they say. And they're absolutely right. People move on. Right. So while COVID is still fresh in a lot of people's minds, there are a lot of people that have just moved on as well, right? And there are some people that are pissed off, right? And that's dope, right? You want that, right? I want people to say, this was all a bunch of nonsense, right? And you locked me down and I lost my job and you forced us to get this vaccine in order to continue to work. And now, you know, now they're admitting that the vaccine is not even effective, right? You know, there's tons of it. Like, I think it's Moderna has tons of it that they can't get rid of, right? They're trying to dump it on African countries because they have so many of them laying around.
Billy Ray, that's because they love Africa.
What's up, buddy?
That's because they love Africa so much. Yeah, I want to make sure.
Of course, right. It's because they love Africa, and that's why they do things like that, you know?
That's
I'm sure.
True. Well, yeah. Well, listen, I want to get into this and a little bit more. I want to get into Yuri Bezmenov talking about the psychological trauma and traumatization of people and how easy it is to break a human being. Yeah. We'll be right back after more. We're going to go to the break. This is TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Jeremy Nell and Germ Warfare.
I like Trump. All right, so let me just throw it out there. I like Trump. When he won in 2016, I remember my wife and I woke up in the morning and we had a little celebration because every establishment media outlet was projecting a Clinton win. And it was so wonderful to see how he just turned that thing on its head. I know that Trump is flawed. He is a politician. Warp Speed was a disastrous campaign, and he's done a few other policy decisions as president that I didn't like, but it doesn't really matter because I'm not American, so I'm just an outsider observing. I kind of get the feeling, though, that he shouldn't run for president. I don't know. I think he had his time. I can't tell you why. I just somehow think that he's a little too cocksure of himself. I suspect Ron DeSantis might take him in the final lap. I'm not sure. But we'll see how it goes.
Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
To some people, the sound of a baby babbling doesn't mean much. But that's not necessarily true. By 6 months, they're combining vowels and consonants. By 9 months, they're trying out different kinds of sounds. And by 12 months, their babbling is beginning to take on some meaning. Especially if there's no babbling at all. Little to no babbling by 12 months or later is just one of the possible signs of autism in children. Early screening and intervention can make a lifetime of difference and unlock a world of possibilities. Take the first step at autismspeaks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Today's conversation, Charlie Robinson on today's News Talk, TNT Radio. TNT Radio.
We're back with Billy Ray Valentine, host of The Infinite Fringe and America Unplugged. And Billy Ray, I want to talk to you about Yuri Bezmenov, former KGB agent. And we were getting into the psychological traumatization of the general public through COVID and 9/11, in particular in New York City, a place that I think was sort of obviously the epicenter of 9/11, but really for COVID as well. We watched insane dictates being handed down by psychopathic governors. And it made me think of, you know, after we got through this whole thing, it made me think of Yuri Bezmenov and what he talked about and how he said that there was a step-by-step process for demoralizing people, right? And part of this was, there was step three was crisis. He said, perhaps 6 weeks of chaos as a climactic turning point. And then after this, the fourth step, first was demoralization that took 20 years. The second was destabilization, which took 5 years. And then the crisis comes, right? So we have this crisis for 6 weeks or 2 years, however you want to phrase it. And then the normalization happens. This stage changes the appreciation of what the status quo looks like. And I think that's kind of where we are now. Have we normalized insanity inside the United States?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I can't help to think that that was the goal, right? like you just broke down the steps that Uri laid out, right? And I can't help to think, well, they said it. They've said it, Charlie. It's a new normal. Yeah. They wanted to break the old normal, you know, whatever that was. And normal is malleable. You can change normal. You can't change natural. What natural is what natural is. But normal changes all the time. Now it's normal for little kids to have heart attacks. It's normal for most of the population to get cancer at some point in their life here in the United States, right? These are normal things, run of the mill, expected almost, right? And this is because of the way we live our lives and a bunch of other things, you know, that have been promoted by the powers that be, in my opinion. But absolutely, there is trauma, and we have been broken as a people, and as a result, I think we've reached out to external sources like politicians and people that promise that they will save us in some way, shape, or form. So we reach out to them to look for some type of security, right? Like a blanket, like somebody to coddle us at this point, because it's just been traumatizing on so many different levels. That the American public they've never been, in my opinion, I don't have stats for this, but I don't think the American public has ever been into politics as much as they are now. You know, they're so, and divided, divided, the left-right paradigm is incredible, you know, what's going on. And they believe everything they're told for the most part. I mean, there's a growing number of people that question, which is great, right? We want that. We want to put these people to the fire, right? We don't want to accept any narrative that comes out just cause, right? But there's a large number of a majority of people that just accept, right? That will just listen to the talking heads on CNN or Fox News or any of these quote unquote news outlets, right? And accept what they're saying, either because it fits their worldview or they don't know any better. Right. And then they start pointing fingers at each other. And this is how we ended up here. But yeah, we're a big traumatized society where it's incredible what's been done to a once proud and strong people here in the United States, me included. It's evident. It's hard to deny.
I think about the average person out there and as frustrated as I get with them, there's part of me that almost can't blame them. So they wake up in the morning, let's say they're getting ready for work. They turn on MSNBC. They start hearing about this version of reality. Then they get in their car and drive to work and listen to NPR. Right? Then they get to their desk and they sit down and they start doing some work. Maybe they check the online and they go to CNN.com. And every step along the way, this insanity is reinforced to them. And therefore, they have no perception that the world is much different than that, because everywhere they turn, the information seems to confirm what they were told by the previous network. And then you run into these people in the wild, right, at a dinner party or whatnot,
in the wild,
in a grocery store, and you have a conversation with them. And you and it occurs to you about 5 seconds in that you guys are living on a different planet. You know, right. that your media diet is much different than their media diet. And I wonder if it's even their fault at this point. Is it just have we allowed the media too much influence in the way we perceive the world?
It's there's a lot of things that go into play with that question, right? And is it our fault? Maybe to a degree, but I believe largely no, it is not our fault. with advancements in technology, these things have become possible, right? The reach of people that want to push an agenda, right, are you know, larger than they've ever been. And I always think about the television, you know, when the television was introduced, and I'm going to sound very puritanical here, but I'm just saying, I love TV, by the way. I have about four of them. So take this, you know, for what it's worth. But I was born into this system. And this is what I mean. Is it really our fault when we were born into this? And it's going to continue to happen. But at one point, the television didn't exist. And there was some, you know, when the television finally was introduced, there was somebody out there screaming and yelling at the top of their lungs. This is a problem. This is a problem. We want to know why it's a problem, because everybody's going to be glued to these things. It's going to give you artificial light, and it's going to screw with your health and your circadian rhythms. And you're going to believe everything that they tell you through these things. Oh, this guy's a freaking psycho, right? The conspiracy theory of the day. But they were right, you know, and the thing is, it's a very slippery slope, right? So through time, right, this is a generation work. As generations continue, they don't know what it's like to be without a television. I don't know what it's like to be without a television. You know, I don't know what it's like to be without the radio, but I do know what it's like to be without the internet. My kids don't know what it's like to be without the internet. They have no idea, and they never will, right? Or they don't know what it's like to be without a cell phone. My kids don't need to go into the library, because all their information, they have the Library of Alexandria on Google. Boom, everything pops up, right? And you mentioned that people are living in different realities because they're consuming their information from different places. Whatever fits their worldview or whatever they feel should be correct. And depending on where you live, that's different, right? So there's these echo chambers that have been built around people. So there are the people that listen to, well, nobody listens to CNN apparently, but people watch MSNBC. So there are people that watch MSNBC and then they get in their cars and they listen to NPR. And their worldview is constantly reinforced, right? They're not listening to anything else outside of that. And that's what they believe. Same thing has happened to the alternative media. We are living in an echo chamber and we only consume the information that we produce and we believe it. We don't have we don't look outside our bubble, right? We don't look to see what CNN is doing, you know, or we just say, you know, they're full of crap, and we're probably right. But regardless, we should still pay attention, right? To see what's going on there. Know your enemy, right? Same with Fox, right? Same with all of these things, and maybe, you know, separate from that altogether in some way, you know, and that would really help out. But is it our fault when we've been incorporated into this since birth? You know, is it really our fault? Like how much of culpability can we, you know, own when we've been born into this system? So what we need to do is it's really hard for humanity to break out, especially if you're living in a large city or in a developed country, right? You have to be born and then you see everything that's going on. And then finally, somehow something clicks and it's like, wait a minute, nothing makes sense. And then we have to battle out of that. So it's the invisible chains of all this, the mental colonization just gets more intense as technology grows, you know, and now we have the threat of a CBDC and, you know, this digital currency that they're going to track everything we do. And my kids, they're not going to know the difference. So that's how the enslavement of mankind progresses without us fighting it, because we don't know the difference. And if we don't know the difference, then what are we fighting for? Right. So, I mean, that's why I don't necessarily think it's completely our fault. It's only our fault because we've created the prison in a way. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Yeah. Yeah. We've allowed ourselves to walk into this digital prison. I have fears like you do. I have an 11-year-old daughter who's going to grow up in a world in which cell phones and social media has always existed.
Right.
And the idea that there is something outside of that is foreign. But we're going up against organized state disinformation campaigns that are very sophisticated, and they get us from a couple different directions. So I feel, you know, you and I've talked at length about this. I direct the vast majority of my anger at the mainstream media because I think that they are worthy of that. I think they are the enemy of humanity. they have done more damage to this world than just about anything. Maybe central banking number one, media number two. What they have, you know, the shaping, the poisoning of minds. But I still hold out a little bit of my frustration for the general public, because we have a duty and responsibility as well. I mean, we play a role in this, and it's part of our obligation to open our eyes and to analyze this information. Say, does this make sense? That what I'm hearing, is this reality? I'm having to. You want me to go one way down a grocery store aisle, but not the other direction down because of COVID? And you want me to stand on a dot that's 6 feet away from a guy, but I'm going to get on an airplane and be 4 inches away from the guy next to me. Does this make any sense? You know, so there's part of me that just wants to grab people and just shake them and say, like, are you paying attention to what's going on here, man? Like, none of this makes sense. And I get it that the state is telling you, and I get it that the media is telling you, and your doctor and Fauci and all the talking heads and all these people, and they're, hey, you got to stand on the dot. God damn, what are you doing? Why are you going the wrong way down the frozen food aisle? Are you trying to kill grandma? You know, I mean, all this stuff. And I feel like at some point people need to stop and go, hang on. None of this makes any sense to me. We are ducking and dodging a virus with a 99.98% survivability rate and a median death age of 80 years old, and I'm expected to remake society because of this? This is crazy. This is poor statistical analysis on the part of humanity. So as much as I despise these bastards, and I do, and you know I do, I also just want to shake people sometimes and just say, hey, man, like, take some responsibility for your own thinking, too. Like, at some point, you've got to recognize that you are wearing a mask walking around town. And on the side of the box, it says, this mask does not prevent the spread or transmission of the coronavirus. And yet, you've got the mask on. So am I being too harsh on society?
All right. So no, you're not, right? But and I learned this the hard way, right? So this is just my approach. I understand exactly where you're coming from. I get it. It's frustrating and it makes you upset, you know, and you look at people and like, what the hell is your problem, right? And this happened within my own family. I was told that I was going to kill my grandma, you know? Meanwhile, my grandma is the healthiest person in the family. She's 90 years old and she's better off than I am.
Oh, good for grandma. No lie. That's the best. Yeah,
she's a beast. I was told by my family members that I was going to kill her. You know, I was like, that's absolutely ridiculous, you know. I understand where you're coming from. So here's my approach, right? And I'm going to take it back to 9/11 because that's how I learned it. When I first came into the truth, quote unquote, or at least investigating what the truth is about 9/11, because no one knows the truth, right? So when you want to dig and dig and dig and find out what's going on, I remember it was close to when I had my first son, and I'm sitting there in the bed. I was reading a couple of books on 9/11, and I'm like, man, this is a problem, you know. And I'm like, I have to tell people, right? So I went and printed up a ton of mainstream articles because I figured this was the way to do it, right? They're not going to listen to anything from the alternative media, you know, so I'm going to get the BBC and I'm going to get the Associated Press and whatever mainstream sources I can get my hands on and show it to these people. But my approach was, hey, look at what happened here. This happened. You've been lied to. Look at this. Look at this. Look at, you know, pay attention. And while it worked for some, it didn't work for others. And some people would get upset at me and they, you know, they would call me all types of names and spit in my direction, all types of stuff. Right. And then I started realizing that maybe this is not the best way to go about it. Right. And I was like, okay. So now I still had the same articles and I had this, but my approach was different. I was like, would you like to see some alternative information on 9/11? Let's talk about this. Are there, you know, do you have any questions? You know, and boy, let me tell you that it totally changed the amount of people that came to me, that spoke to me, and that were open to having the discussions, you know. So to that point, while it's hard to not be upset, I think the best way to go about it is to have some empathy and understand that we were there at one point. I definitely was, you know, and I, if somebody argued with me about it, it probably would push me away, you know, and that's the truth for a lot of people. So I don't want to shake them. I just want to tell them, hey, did you know that maybe, you know, the CDC says that 99, you know, 98% of people recover from this. Oh, you didn't know. Or you don't believe it. Oh, here's the statistic, you know, and then they're like, oh, screw you. I'm like, oh, thank you very much. God bless you. Have an excellent day. Thank you for listening to me. Just kill them with kindness, you know, and that's the best way to get it across. Right. You get more with honey is what they say. And they're absolutely right. You know, and we need to realize that. And it's almost like the Matrix, an awakening, right? We here in the alternative media, we use the Matrix all the time, you know, so it gets, you know, corny. But I don't think there's a better way to draw analysis, right? And to draw a comparison. So we see, you know, Neo waking up from in the Matrix from there's a ton of pods all over the place. And he's the one that happens to wake up. So there's tons of pods all over the place. And we have to somehow get these people to maybe see things our way. And how do we do that? You know, what's the best way to do that? So, I mean, everybody's walking around, everybody's afraid, everybody. And we need to recognize the instruments of deception and of propaganda that the New World Order uses. The New World Order is a term, it's an umbrella term for the powers that be, the elite. You call them whatever you want, right? So we need to realize that and say, okay, this is especially now. I think we're living in the most sophisticated psychological operation that's ever been waged on humankind. And the army, as it came out and said as much with the Ghost in the Machine program that they're running, you know, that they're looking for people to run psychological operations on the people of the United States, on the people of the world. You know, this is admitted. This isn't anything new. You know, so we need to realize that these weapons are being used against us and say, all right, what's the best way? Do we get upset at them? I know it's frustrating when you walk into a place and a couple of summers ago when COVID was through the roof, right? It was at its peak. I went down to Florida and I went to Universal Studios and we were in Volcano Bay. It's a water park. It's dope. Go there. So we wanted to get something to eat. And we go into this area where they're selling food and it's outdoors. It's kind of tentish, but I mean, there were no windows. It was essentially outdoors. And in order to walk in, we had to put on masks. And I was like, I typically don't even say anything to these people because it's just a problem. But I was like, why do we have to put on masks? It's a water park and they're going to get wet or whatever. And we're already outside. And they were like, oh, you have to put on a mask. All right, fine. So we all put on a mask to get to the table. So we walk literally about, I don't know, a few inches to the table. And then they're like, well, now you can take off your mask. And I was like, what's the point of this, you know? But most people are so heavily colonized and indoctrinated that we need to take a different approach, because I think it's part of the mental warfare that when you push, they're going to double down and triple down and quadruple down. And we've seen this with something like the QAnon operation and the Donald Trump and the left-right paradigm operation. We've seen people double down, triple down, and quadruple down when there's an argument. And I don't even take my own advice when it comes to that sometimes, because I can't. It's really tough, yeah. Charlie. So I get it, but I think that's the way to go.
Well, fear does things to a person, for sure. Right. It makes them prioritize short-term thinking as opposed to long-term thinking. You know, what am I going to do? Fight or flight. What am I going to do to stay alive today, tomorrow? I'll worry about tomorrow. And so you get yourself in a mentality where you're not thinking long-term. You're thinking very short-term. And the fear that's pumped out through the media helps to, you know, disengage you from reality, put you in a low vibrational state, which I think allows these people the opportunity to really control you on a level you know, silent weapons for quiet wars. You talked about psychological operations. This is a thing. This isn't speculation. This isn't tinfoil hat land. These are the types of things that they do. They talk about this. You mentioned that they ran the Ghost in the Machine advertisement for it. Hell, they're recruiting for it. This is it's no longer conspiracy theory. This is conspiracy analysis. And I think that the general public has a duty and obligation to grow a backbone, stand up, do a little bit of research, dig into this, and get themselves out of this state of fear, because as long as they're fearful, boy, they are going to be easily manipulated. We got one more segment coming up with Billy Ray Valentine. I'm going to want to talk to you about what's going on in New York City with Mr. Trump. We'll be back after the break. This is TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Remember when Nancy Pelosi's husband was brutally attacked by an intruder with a hammer? Horrible thing. In response, the left and their media mouthpieces made it clear that if you had ever spoken out against the congresswoman, especially as a politician, commentator, or someone with a high profile, you had Paul Pelosi's blood on your hands for what the criminal attacker had done. But I have heard no such claim made against one of the most famous actresses in the world, political activist Jane Fonda, who, a few weeks before the Nashville shooting, went on The View and suggested murder as a response to pro-life supporters.
We're not going back. I don't care what the laws are. We're not going back.
Besides marching and protesting, what else do you suggest?
Well, it doesn't happen overnight. It's not a miraculous... What did you say?
Murder.
Fonda claimed after the show that she was joking, but not while on the show. And I'm not saying that this trans who shot up the school ever saw Fonda's remarks, but you can see the obvious, sick, twisted, dangerous double standard in action. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
I'm just texting him back.
I'm just posting a story.
I'm just changing the song.
I'm just...
No. When it comes to distracted driving, just don't. Sending a text takes your eyes off the road for just 5 seconds, but in that time, your car can travel the length of an entire football field. Any distracted driving just isn't worth it.
Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
You have the power of information. Charlie Robinson on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're back with the final segment with Billy Ray Valentine from New York City. I'm wondering, I've got an article up here right now. It says New York City Mayor Eric Adams blames TikTok for 32% surge in car thefts. Can't be his dumb policies, but I mean, it wouldn't be that. It has to be a Chinese spy app on your phone is opening cars and giving people ideas of, oh my God, what's... We've got Alvin Bragg, the district attorney, who's filing charges against Trump. What do you make of this? Is this just performance art? Are they going to make Trump a martyr? Is this part of the plan? Is this a part of the plan to bump DeSantis out because they think he could actually win it? I'm looking at all of these possibilities, and at this early stage, I really don't know what to think, but you're there. You're right there in the heart of it all. What do they think they're going to do? They're going to make Trump a hero?
Oh my God. thank you for
Teflon Don, the new Teflon Don.
he's been Teflon for quite some time here in New York, man. It's not new, you know, and even this this Stormy Daniels thing, you know, that's not new either, right? Years she's been trying to sell her story and talk about what happened, and no one gave a damn, but somehow they give a damn now, right? Which leads me to believe that something else is up, right, around the corner. Because I mean, what's the difference between, you know, a few years ago and now? You know, besides time and whatever else is going on that they're not telling us about. You know, So here's the way I see it: Donald Trump is going to get the nomination for the Republican nomination for the presidency. Like, he's going to, no matter what, DeSantis doesn't stand a chance. DeSantis, he just doesn't. He's Donald Trump light, right? He tries to be Donald Trump in so many different ways. And he comes off to Donald Trump supporters as not as, you know, well, they have the real deal. They have Donald Trump. Why are they going to take Donald Trump light? You know, so I don't think he stands a chance. And Alvin Bragg, you have to understand the mentality out here of people hate Donald Trump. They hate him. I am not a fan of that guy, you know, at all, as you know, Charlie. But you know, there's a different I don't know. People hate this guy. So, I mean, it's a badge of honor to be the guy to take down Donald Trump, to finally get him to be, you know, to indict him on something. This guy has been a career criminal all his life, you know,
yeah,
dealing with the mob out here in New York City, not paying people, backstabbing people. 30 women have accused him of rape. I think at least 30 women have accused him of rape. He's doesn't exactly have a stellar record, but they can't nail him down for any. And that's why I call him the Teflon Don. Everything slides off of him, right? And they finally got him on something. And they know that it's largely nonsense, and they know that's nothing's going to happen. I mean, Donald Trump did these things, but I mean, what are you going to do? Like, really, he's not going to jail. You know he's not going to jail. He's going to walk right out of there. So what's the point of this? You know, I don't understand it, but I understand it on a level that Alvin Bragg wants to make his career, and he already has at this point. And the utter hatred for this man, which I can understand, to be honest with you, is to the level that they want to just nail him down. And since he was indicted here in New York, I think it's going to happen in Georgia. Georgia is that's a more solid case, a more serious case, and I think they got serious stuff on him over there. So I think it's going to happen there too. I don't know if it'll stop him from running for president, and I do think it reinvigorates some of his support, right? But to that point, I will tell people, and people that are outside of the United States may not know this dynamic, and a lot of people here in the United States don't quite understand. All it's going to do is serve to reinvigorate Trump's base. It's like preaching to the choir. Maybe some people that have veered away from Trump will come back to him, but they have to have liked him in the first place. People that hate Donald Trump will continue to hate Donald Trump. And they will be happy that he's going to jail, and they won't, you know, they'll support anything that actually sees him there for an extended period of time. And no, they don't want him to ever run for president again. They don't want to see him in any type of way try to make, try to reach out to that office. They want to see him gone. So they'll do anything to see him gone. So, I mean, I don't think it really changes anything. It reinvigorates the base. You know, and it gives them what they need to solidify or add more concrete on a divide that already exists. But people that hate Donald Trump, they give him no sympathy. People that don't like Donald Trump, they don't like him. People that don't want to vote for Donald Trump will not. This is doubling down, tripling down, quadrupling down. You have your team. It's the Yankees versus the Red Sox, right? I don't know, pick some team around the world. It is that. The two biggest rivals in sports. This is what it is. And they're not switching sides no matter what. So that's what's going down. I'm going to go down there on Tuesday. Please hit me up and congratulate me for Vengeance Day. I can't wait. I happen to be off that day. So I'm going to go down there and see what develops, you know, see what I can see. Maybe I get some footage. It's going to be fun. And as soon as some January 6th nonsense starts to break out, I am running in the other direction very quickly. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, I have no love for Donald Trump either. I've worked in real estate for 25 years. Just about every real estate developer I've ever met is a scumbag. It's part of the DNA.
Right.
It's just what, you know, slow paying, not paying, suing people, getting sued. It comes with the territory. I never liked that personality type of Donald Trump. But take his politics out of it. Just the I'm the best. I'm the greatest. My company's the best. My hotels, my real estate. I saw his real estate project in Las Vegas. It was average. You know, it wasn't the best. So I never really cared for that. That's not a personality type I would enjoy being around. But there is one thing about him that I do love. He makes all the right people insane.
Yeah.
He makes the media crazy. He makes the hardcore left lose their mind. And boy, you know, if we're taking this back to a Red Sox Yankees analogy, do you really want to pitch to Donald Trump in the bottom of the ninth inning at home in Yankee Stadium, where he beats this case and comes out of it and says, "You guys have got nothing on me. You never have. You never will. I'm going to run for president. I'm going to win it. You guys are going to have to deal with it." I'll tell you what, I don't like him. And I don't want him to be the president. I certainly don't want Joe Biden to be the president. I don't want any president. I speak at anarchist conventions, for God's sake. I mean, I don't like it. I don't like the system at all. But I would be lying if I didn't say there was part of me that didn't want to see that the blue hairs curl up into a ball and suck their thumb when he becomes the president again and breaks their brain in a way that is unfit. You want to talk about Yuri Bezmenov breaking people's brains? Oh, I mean, Donald Trump coming back for a second term, the left would lose their minds. And there is a part of me, not the biggest part, but a small part of me that would love to see that just because of the reaction. I mean, I think we might see ritual suicide over at CNN. Actually, you'd probably bring the ratings back.
Oh, well, yeah, CNN will be happy about it.
Yeah. But maybe MSNBC is a better example of that. Yeah. Mika Brzezinski would light herself, self-immolate on Morning Joe if Donald Trump came back in The View. Oh, The View. Could you imagine? Holy moly. Could you imagine Whoopi Goldberg the day after Donald Trump gets reelected? That would be television that would be hard to miss. But, you know, these are psychopathic people. Right. These are people that don't care about us. They don't care that Donald Trump, Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton, Ron DeSantis to an extent. You know, these people, you don't rise to positions of power like this without being chosen. And so final thoughts on this. So where are we heading? Where's this election going to go, Billy Ray? How do you think it plays out? 2024.
People really want to hear this.
I want to hear it. I want to hear it. I want to hear the unpopular opinion.
I will tell you this. I you know where I used to work, and I was there when Donald Trump won the presidency of the United States, and it was like someone died. Okay, people were literally crying, and I didn't understand it. I was walking through the halls, and I was like, "Why are you okay? What's going on?" And they were like, "Hillary Clinton lost the election." I'm like, "Yeah, she lost." crying. I'm like, "Are you okay? Like, calm down." Like, and I mean, people were that upset that Donald Trump won the election. So if he ever were to win again, it'd be a problem. But I want people to really keep in mind that Donald Trump has never really been a popular president. Donald Trump just barely beat Hillary Clinton in the Electoral College. And in reality, he lost the popular vote to probably the worst candidate in the history of candidates, Hillary Clinton.
Agreed.
You know, the worst. If you would have put, and this is assuming you believe in the elections. I think elections are rigged in a totally different way than most people do. Dominion is suing Fox News for everything they have, and they're going to win. They're going to win. They're suing Rudolph Giuliani and Sidney Powell, and they're going to win. All right. And Fox News has already come out, you know, Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity didn't believe a word that they were saying to the American public. You know, behind the scenes, they were saying, "Oh, this is all nonsense. Sidney Powell's crazy and Donald Trump lost the election." That's what they were thinking backstage, but they would tell you something else on camera. Hence why you shouldn't trust these people, right?
No.
Here's what's going to happen. I don't think Donald Trump wins this election again. And all that happens is, we are in for something else 2024, you and I and everybody else here, because no one's going to believe it. You know, no one, I mean, well, the people that hate Donald Trump are going to believe it. And this is what I mean about the spheres. I mean, the echo chambers, people that love Donald, they think he's going to win in a landslide because they're only around people that love Donald Trump. And they only see all these people in stadiums filling it up and boat parties and all that stuff. That's all they see.
Yeah.
They don't see anything else. So they're gonna everybody's gonna assume it was rigged. And here we go. We are off to the races. 2024 is going to be something very interesting here in the United States and inevitably for the rest of the world, because as the United States goes, the world goes, even though that's changing very quickly. If the Democrats decide to run Michelle Obama, it is a wrap, ladies and gentlemen. It is a wrap. You want to talk about a landslide? That's what's it. Going to happen here.
That's it. Oh, boy, man. Could you imagine Michelle Obama, president of the United States? Billy Ray Valentine.
Yes, sir.
Is the host of The Infinite Fringe, the co-host of America Unplugged with our next guest, Tony Arterburn, and the great Don Jeffries. Thank you, Billy Ray. We appreciate you. We're going up to the news. Check it out. We'll be back after the break. This is TNT Radio.